Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us in today's webinar, Interstate Medical Licensure Compact Expedited Process, that will be presented by Matthew Stanford. My name is Kayla Chatterton, and I am the Education Coordinator at Wisconsin Hospital Association. I'd like to start off with a few housekeeping announcements. First, in an effort to eliminate distracting background noise, we have muted all of our phone lines. Because the phone lines are muted throughout the presentation today, if you have a question for the presenter or a technical issue, please use the WebEx chat feature on your screen. We will be checking the WebEx chat throughout the session today. If you have a technical problem and need someone from WHA to contact you, please provide a phone number in that written request for help or call the front desk at WHA. If you have a question for today's presenter, please type it in the text box on the chat panel at any time during the presentation. We will take a few minutes to address any questions that have been submitted at the end of today's webinar. And Matthew will respond. It is my pleasure to introduce our presenter for today, Matthew Stanford, who is the General Counsel at Wisconsin Hospital Association. Now I'd like to turn it over to Matthew.
Great. Thanks, Kayla. What I'm going to do today is talk a little bit about starting at a very high level, kind of a 50,000-foot level, and then slowly come down into a little bit lower level in terms of exactly how to go forward with an expedited license under the new Interstate Medical Licensure Compact. Getting this compact up and running was something that was one of WHA's policy priorities, and so we're pleased now to see, after the introduction of the bill in Wisconsin in 2014, we've now gotten to a point where in April the compact began issuing expedited licenses. So I thought it was, again, appropriate to really walk through that whole process at this point. So again, what is the compact? And at a very high level, it creates an alternative and voluntary expedited path for many physicians that have a medical license in good standing to receive a Wisconsin medical license. Traditional licensees that have gone through the regular process are not impacted by the compact, and they can still choose to be licensed through the regular process. And that applies to not just Wisconsin, but any other state that is a part of the interstate compact. From our perspective, while we were engaged in this policy effort is really two issues. One, reducing the red tape that is involved with getting a Wisconsin license by ultimately reducing the amount of redundant paperwork that is required to be licensed, not just in Wisconsin, but other states. And then also ultimately increasing access to care by reducing that amount of time that it takes to receive a Wisconsin license. Eligible physicians can now more quickly begin practicing in Wisconsin communities. And those were really what we talked about with the legislature in getting this bill moved through. And now since being introduced nationally late in 2014, there are actually now 22 states as of yesterday that have enacted the compact, including Iowa, Minnesota, and Illinois. In terms of, and again, this is one of those policies that it was a little bit of a team effort. We began in 2014 by utilizing the folks on WHA's Physician Leaders Council to give us some key guidance on where we should be at in terms of advocating for the interstate compact, but also identifying some additional Wisconsin implementation safeguards that I'll talk about at the very end to make sure that some of the protections that we have in the state are not changed. A little bit of a balancing act there because the compact will supersede other portions of the state law to the extent that it is necessary to make the compact work. But we wanted to make sure that provisions that weren't necessarily superseded in state law still were preserved. And again, I'll talk a little bit about that at the very end. This is one of our actual priorities for our advocacy day in 2014, and at that utilized that event to garner co-sponsors for the Physician Licensure Compact Bill in Wisconsin. And actually, at that point in time, that bill garnered as many co-sponsors as any other bill in that session. So it's a hugely successful effort that was paired with our WHA Advocacy Day. WHA then testified along with Gordy Lewis, who's the CEO at Burnett Medical Center in Grantsburg, on the benefits of this bill in committees. We had our HEAT grassroots efforts, generated additional contacts in support of the bill, and then other systems. So Gunderson Health System, Mayo Health System, the Medical College of Wisconsin, and the Wisconsin Medical Society also all testified in support of this bill. And then ultimately was signed into law in 2015 in kind of a unique situation where the bill was actually signed in two different places. Usually it's just signed in one place, whether it's in Madison or sometimes the governor does a bit of a roadshow. And in this case, actually signed the bill in two parts. First in Sparta at the Mayo Clinic Health System hospital there in Sparta, and then later that same day up at Burnett Medical Center up in Grantsburg. So kind of a cool deal there for the folks that were all involved in that. So as I mentioned before, right now there are 22 states that are a part of the compact. The latest state to adopt is Tennessee. There are a handful of other states that are still considering legislation on that, and be yet to see exactly whether that proceeds or not. But again, certainly it's spreading across the country since it was first introduced as a concept in 2014. So the timeline on this has been the Interstate Commission, which is something that is formed by the compact to help administer the compact, first convened in October of 2015 to begin developing the infrastructure to establish the expedited licensure process under the compact. Wisconsin then joined the compact officially in 2015, following enactment of the bill. And then last year in the fall, the Interstate Commission actually began promulgating certain procedures and internal rulemaking to implement that expedited licensure process. So laying that foundation and groundwork for how this will operate at some of the more detailed levels. Ultimately then, last month, the Interstate Commission activated its online expedited licensure process at the website IMLCC.org, which is the Interstate Medical Licensure Compact Commission. And actually, I'm going to step out here for a minute, and we'll show folks where that site is. So if we go to IMLCC.org, this is the website, and the various pieces of information that folks can see, apply now, and we'll talk about this later, gets to the information of actually starting that process. And then important to know, as part of the effort to get the compact enacted in Wisconsin, one of the things that one of the chairs of the two health committees wanted to make sure that there was an opportunity to make sure that the compact was implemented by the Interstate Commission as folks were intending. So technically, Wisconsin must enact legislation by December of 2019 in order to reauthorize the compact. The purpose of that was, again, making sure that the commission wasn't going off in a direction that would ultimately supersede significantly or harm the way Wisconsin's Medical Practice Act works. And I'm pleased to say, given the rulemaking that has already taken place and the way the system is operating, that's something that really should not be a concern. So what are some of the key elements of the compact language before we get into the actual process for the compact? And there's really some important pieces. And the first one is jurisdiction. So what is governed by the compact, what is not? We'll walk through the eligibility for an expedited license. So only certain physicians are eligible for the expedited process. It talks about the application process, fees, And then there's, once you have a expedited license issued through the compact process, there are additional required reports from the state of licensure and some additional language and provisions regarding how investigations and disciplinary actions will be handled by for physicians that have been issued an expedited license under the compact. So on the jurisdiction piece, couple of really just key core fundamental parts. The compact maintains what is the principle in all states, that the practice of medicine occurs where the patient is located at the time of encounter. And then, so which state's laws apply depend on where that patient is. Again, that's been Wisconsin's policy. That's been all other states' policies. But it's a fundamental part, again, to what the compact is. And as we talked about before, this is an alternative process, and it's a voluntary process. It does not change a state's existing Medical Practice Act, except for the fact is it creates an additional pathway for licensure. So again, it's differentiating between the process to get licensed versus what are the requirements that that licensee then has to follow in that state. Put another way is, whether you are licensed through the expedited process under the compact or the regular process, that physician is required to meet all of the state's existing provisions regarding the practice of medicine. And then finally, state boards still retain jurisdiction to impose an adverse action against a license, even regardless of whether it's issued through the compact or not. So here's where we start getting a little bit into the meat of who of how to apply and who can apply. And the statute lists out who is eligible for an expedited license. And so an individual needs to meet all of these provisions. So first, they have to hold a full unrestricted license in any compact state. The next two are, I think, what folks would generally expect. You have to be a graduate of a medical school that's under the International Medical School registrations, or the LCME or the COCA. There's also a provision that has been enacted in rule, but it's consistent with other provisions, that the individual has to pass each level of the appropriate exam within 3 attempts. You have to successfully complete an approved graduate medical education. This is the one that there was, the next one regarding specialty certification did have has been a concern among some states and was an issue that was talked about some in our legislature. And that involves the person must hold a recognized specialty certification or a time-unlimited specialty certification. So, in other words, physicians that are grandfathered in to specialty certification. Again, it's akin a little bit to the maintenance of certification, but that is why one important piece is that this is not a requirement to receive licensure in a state. It's just a requirement in order to receive licensure through this expedited process. The last four really get into, again, having that clean record. So no felony or gross misdemeanor convictions, have never held a license in any state, not just compact states, that have been subject to discipline, never had a DEA license suspended or revoked, and are not under active investigation by a board or law enforcement in any state, federal, or foreign jurisdiction. So if a physician meets all of these requirements, they are eligible for an expedited license. If the physician does not meet all of these, they are not eligible for the compact expedited licensure process. So how does one then go about getting an expedited license under the compact? This is at the very high 50,000-foot level. Really, it's kind of a two-part process. First, you have to apply for and get what is called a letter of qualification through the Interstate Medical Licensure Commission. And that letter of qualification basically is the primary source verification for all of the criteria for eligibility under the compact. As part of that, The physician has to pay a $700 non-refundable fee. Part of that goes to the Interstate Commission for the process of setting up the infrastructure, and part of that will go to the state that is actually doing the primary source verification. Other states, once that letter of qualification has been issued, will then are required to rely on that letter of qualification to individually issue an expedited license for the state without having to go through that state's own set of primary source verification. So in other words, if you hold that letter of qualification, any other compact state is obligated to provide you a license so long as you pay the licensure fee that the state provides. So as folks are thinking about it, there are at least two different fees. One is the $700 fee to apply to get the letter of qualification. And then for each state that the physician wants to receive that expedited license, they do have to pay that state's individual license fee. So going down a little bit further, so kind of at that 30,000-foot level, what is that application process? So one of the things the physician is going to have to do is to designate a compact state as the state of principal license in order to receive an expedited license under this process. So what is a state of principal license? And under the rulemaking, it's been established that it must be one of the following. It has to be either the physician's state of primary residence or a state in which at least 25% of the practice of medicine for that physician occurs, or it can be a state in which the physician's employer is located, or the state of principal licensure can be the state of residence for U.S. federal income tax purposes for the physician. So providing a bit of flexibility as to what that is. Why is it important to designate that state of principal license? Well, it's because whoever they designate will be the state that will actually go through and issue that letter of qualification and do all of the primary source verification. So the physician will go back onto that site that I showed before on the IMLCC site under the apply here, and they will file an online application and then pay the service fees for an expedited license that is then forwarded on to that state of principal license. The state of principal license will then evaluate whether the physician is eligible for the expedited licensure. If they find that they are eligible, they will issue the letter of qualification, both the Interstate Commission and the physician. If the state of principal licensure has already done primary source verification of education, examination, other qualifications, additional primary source verification is not required. So again, trying to expedite that overall process with each of the compact states, recognizing, you know, we don't need to do our own primary source verification. We can rely on one of the other compact states that they have done that. Ultimately, after verification of eligibility and the payment of the state licensure fees, a compact member state, so the ones that the physician wants to receive a license for, will then issue an expedited license. Importantly, that expedited license is valid for the same period and in the same manner as required for the regular license held in the state. So, for example, if a physician in Wisconsin receives a expedited license through the compact for Wisconsin, the dates of expiration and renewal are the exact same dates as they are under current statute for a license that's currently offered. Fees. Under this, again, we talked about there are two different fees, and some of these will actually be collected by the Interstate Commission and then forwarded on to individual states. Under the current rules that have been set forth by the Interstate Commission. Again, we talked about the one-time $700 service fee to process a letter of qualification. Importantly, as we've talked about already, for each state that the physician is seeking licensure, that physician will pay the state's licensure fee. It could be the regular license fee, but in theory, it could be an expedited licensure fee. At this point in time, it appears that all the states will just use their regular license fee for that. If a physician, after receiving their letter of qualification and after receiving expedited licenses from other states, decides, well, I'd like to get an expedited license from another compact state that I've not previously applied for, there is an additional $100 service fee that will go to the Interstate Commission for subsequent requests for expedited licensure. That service fee does not apply to renewal requests, and we'll talk about renewals in a little bit. And my understanding is, my recollection is, that $100 service fee is then per request, or in per state. And I'll talk a little bit this at the end. There was actually a meeting just yesterday of the commission talking about how renewals will happen. It's all still a little bit up in the air, though. Yesterday the board recommended setting a $25 service fee for that. But there are some other issues that I think they're going to still have to tackle in regards to renewals, and we'll kind of see. And again, I'll talk about that in a little bit. So let's go delving down to that, the most detailed level. What exactly is that application process? And before you start, folks really should complete three different pieces of information, and I'll show you where it's at on the website. You need to complete a qualifications application, which actually walks through all the individual eligibility requirements. The physician will need to complete an affidavit for release of information. And then also, it would be helpful to gather information on what's called a core data sheet, because all of that information will then go into the online application. And again, let me walk back through how that works. So if you go back to the Compact's license or Compact's website, go to apply now. This is the very beginning of that. There's a point here of preview the application documents, and it has those three documents. So again, to see the qualifications application, it's basically the same questions referring to eligibility that we talked about before. So what's your state of principal license that you're seeking, getting at the information to qualify for that state as a state of principal license, talking about your medical school graduate information, or it's a medical school education, residency education, what your board certification is, and then the other pieces regarding criminal activity, other pieces. So that's all there. The physician will have to sign that, type name, and it will. My understanding is that's something that will be uploaded as part of the process. The other piece I want to show is the core data sheet. And again, this is really the information that folks ought to have on hand before they begin that application process. So demographic information, national provider identifier, getting the information of which medical school, dates of completion, that type of information. So again, beginning that online application, walks through that. As I mentioned, you have to, at the time of license, the application, selecting your state of principal licensure, providing the information on the qualifications application, the core data sheet, and then also we'll have to submit, again, it's a non-refundable application fee of $700. So, but before, applying that, make sure that your physician actually meets all of those criteria in the letter of qualification, because if they don't and you apply and the state can't verify that, you're going to lose your $700. As I mentioned, upon the payment and completion, the Interstate Medical Licensure Commission will then forward that information onto the designated state's principal licensure, and they will review that application, determine if the eligibility qualifications are met, conduct the primary source verification of those qualifications. And then an important piece is that they will then provide, the state of principal licensure will provide instructions to the applicant for obtaining fingerprints for a criminal background check. This has been an interesting issue that came to the attention of the commission kind of fall of last year, where there was some issues in some states where the FBI had concerns with how the state's process worked for gathering fingerprint information and disseminating that. What we have heard from Wisconsin is that the FBI is satisfied with the way Wisconsin's process works for as a state of principal licensure, and we've actually been able to, in this state, process those pretty quickly. What we're hearing, though, however, is in some other states, A, until they get their license, their statutes changed, they are not able to serve as a state of principal licensure because of this fingerprinting issue. I know Minnesota is one of those examples. They, if I remember right, in the last couple of weeks actually enacted legislation that should fix that. So they should be up and running relatively soon if they aren't already. But the other thing we've heard is that there's been some discrepancies between states of how long that process takes. Apparently, at least how Wisconsin is doing it, is that they're using an electronic fingerprinting process that takes basically a matter of a couple of days. However, in other states, it's been taking sometimes weeks. So, we're seeing some discrepancies between states. So if you have one fingerprinting that seems to be going through fine for one state, doesn't necessarily mean that it'll be the same in a different state. And then lastly, again, if they get all that information, they will issue that letter of qualification to the applicant and the commission, verifying or denying the applicant's eligibility for an expedited license. After receiving that letter of qualification, the physician may now select the compact states in which the physician wishes to receive an expedited license. And as I mentioned, they will have to pay each individual state's fees for that. If we go back here again to the apply now section, and if you already possess a letter of qualification, here's where you will be able to select the states in which you would like to receive a license. So say Colorado, Minnesota, you select those, and then that will generate the process to get those expedited licenses from those states and also then generate the fees, which the Interstate Medical License Commission will collect those fees and then forward them on to the individual states. Oh, that's one problem when you mess around with your slides. And we were here. Two other things to keep in mind, and I mentioned the $100 service fee if you request the additional states after that initial dissemination of the letter of qualification. There is also a provision that was passed in the rules early on that indicates that a letter of qualification expires 365 days after issuance. We've talked preliminarily with a couple of the commissioners about potentially revisiting that issue. There's a number of other provisions in the compact that requires data sharing and updating of the verification information. And so we want to make sure that, again, once you have that letter of qualification, does it really make sense for that to expire so soon? So if a physician, so for example, has a compact license and has applied through the compact in a number of other states but not Wisconsin, and then 3 years later is like, oh, hey, I'd like to come to Wisconsin, we'd rather not them have to go through that letter of qualification process once again. We're not sure that that was necessarily the intent of the compact. So it's something we want to work through with that and have, again, had some preliminary discussions. Given that there's a little bit of a time issue, or we've got some time on this, I think we're going to let the commission get through some of the issues regarding renewals, but it's something that we will be asking them to revisit that issue. As I said, once that letter of qualification is out, the Compact States Medical Board shall promptly issue a full and unrestricted license to the applicant. So that's the process for actually getting the license. One of the things that folks need to give it some thought to is, well, does the online application, the expedited licensure process make sense for all physicians at all times? And are there differences between a license granted through the compact process versus the normal licensure process? And that's what we'll talk through here a little bit now in terms of things for folks to think about as they're weighing those two options. So, as I mentioned, there's a little bit of a to-be-determined process for renewals. In the statute, it does talk about requirements to receive a renewal through the compact, and it's similar to the requirements of applying in the first place. There are obviously the when a physician is renewing their license in other states, they will need to pay the state's renewal fee. Yesterday, as I mentioned, that there was a language inserted that the board is intending to charge a $25 fee to process renewals through the compact. I think one of the things that there was some discussion of, though, is does it make sense to require that renewals all run through the compact provision? As I said earlier on, in terms of the jurisdictional issues, that each state is still permitted to state all of their requirements for maintaining licensure in that state. And that includes setting how long a license lasts, when the expiration dates are, that sort of a thing. So there's a little bit of a discussion of, in all cases, does it make sense to require a renewal through the compact, or does it make sense to let that have the physician keep track of that individually for all of their individual state licenses. There are also some required reports that must go from individual states to the Interstate Commission under the statutory language. And there's language that talks about the compact state shall report to the commission any public action or complaints against a physician who has applied or received an expedited license. So they're going to need to keep track of state medical board will need to keep track of the physicians that have the, quote, regular license and those that have received an expedited license, and then provide that required information to the commission. Any disciplinary or investigatory information determined necessary and proper by the Interstate Commission, and then complaint and disciplinary information upon the request of another board. Also, any amendment to that core data set, which again is generally some of the eligibility information and the primary source verification stuff. So if that changes that, and any state knows of a change to that, they're required to report that to the commission. And then that gets disseminated out to the other boards. There's also language that talks about investigations and discipline. Under the statutory compact, and this is one of those provisions that there's not been additional rulemaking on at this point in time, and frankly not a lot of discussion by the commission, as they've been working to just get the process up and running. But under the statute, that states may participate in joint investigations of physicians licensed by compact states. There's language that talks about subpoenas issued by a compact state shall be enforceable in other compact states. And then also language about sharing investigative and other materials in furtherance of investigation. And then also permits compact states to investigate violations of medical practice acts in other compact states. This has been clarified a little bit in some rulemaking regarding information practices, which we think actually provided some additional clarifications that were important. And one of those pieces was the commission made it clear that the commission is prohibited from providing any licensure, complaint, disciplinary, or investigation information maintained by the commission to any individual entity or other organization other than a member state board. At the end, I'll talk a little bit about, again, some of the Wisconsin implementation language that we included, and this was one of the things we wanted to address. It was a little bit gray in terms of the statute, if it was actually limited to other boards, or were they saying that they were permitted to share it with other folks, whether it's plaintiffs, attorneys, or others. So that has seeming to be cleared up. Here's one area where I think folks need to give a little bit of thought to in terms of whether the compact necessarily makes sense for all of your physicians. under the compact statutory language, discipline that is taken by any compact state is automatically deemed unprofessional conduct in all compact states in which a physician has an expedited license. As part of that, there's language that states that a revocation or a surrender or an indefinite suspension of a license in the state of principal licensure automatically results in the same in any other compact state. And then on the flip side, if there's a revocation, a surrender, or an indefinite suspension of a license in a non-principal state, that automatically results in a 90-day suspension in all other compact states. When I go back and look at the first bullet, and again, this has not been an area that the commission has taken up rulemaking yet, but I think it may be, there may need to be a little more discussion here. Is one of the issues folks need to think about is there are differing elements to each state's practice act, and that's again recognized in the jurisdiction of the statute. But we know, and a good example is actually telemedicine, that some states have what are frankly a bit more stringent telemedicine requirements that would prohibit practices that would otherwise be permitted in other states. And some of that language actually comes back to some language that state medical boards have successfully implemented to sometimes kind of prevent quote, out-of-state physicians from coming into the state and providing telemedicine. I know there was actually a specific case involving a physician that was licensed, and this is pre-compact, but licensed in the state of Montana and a number of other states, and the physician issued a prescription via telemedicine that technically was prohibited under the Montana Practice Act, but was not prohibited in a number of other states. However, when the discipline that resulted was a significant suspension of that physician's license, and they came down really hard on this physician, that then had repercussions in other states, and that other states were now trying to decide, well, is this also subjected them to automatic investigations in other states? So that could be an example here of, okay, if you have a physician, and actually Iowa's a little bit of an example, they have more stringent requirements than Wisconsin. If you have a physician that is licensed in Iowa and Wisconsin under the compact, and if the physician violates a provision of telemedicine in Iowa, that will automatically result in unprofessional conduct in Wisconsin, even though the practice that the physician did in Iowa isn't prohibited by Wisconsin law. So it's something, that's one of the risks of utilizing the compact. It's not necessarily, you know, something that should automatically deter people, and people have to be aware of what their requirements are in each state, but it's something that folks ought to be aware of as they're thinking about the pros and cons of entering into a compact expedited license. As I mentioned, while there is automatic suspension in other states for one act in another state, the process to actually reinstate a license after that automatic renewal is not automatic. So that physician, if they are suspended in one state, they're going to have to go to each individual board in order to get reinstated on that. And again, language similar to what we talked about the deeming that indicates actions by compact states may be deemed conclusive as a matter of law and fact decided in other compact states. As I mentioned early on, we did add on some additional what we termed implementation language to try and clarify some issues regarding how Wisconsin would be interpreting the compact. We believe that all these interpretations are frankly consistent with what we believe that the Interstate Commission will do, but it was something that we wanted to make sure that if the commission went off in a totally different direction than what we thought Wisconsin was entering into, we want to have a mechanism to try and remedy that. One of those, we want to make it clear, because it wasn't entirely clear in the statute, that the compact's mandated reports and other provisions only apply to physicians that require a compact license, so it's not all Wisconsin license holders. Again, everything we're seeing from the commission is that that's consistent with what they're going to do. We talked already about the out-of-state subpoena power, and that could only come from the compact state's medical examining boards, not any person in a compact state. One is to make sure that the joint investigations provisions, again, only applies to physicians that had a compact license in Wisconsin. And then also wanted to make clear that recognize that there are some additional costs to the state to make these expedited licenses happen. We want to segregate the expenses that the MEB will incur in order to make an expedited license happen separate from the regular physician fees, in that ultimately the MEB may charge fees to compact licensees to cover all costs of the MEB. So they have that authority to do that. So that kind of concludes what the presentation. I see that we do have a few questions that have come up from folks, and looking at some of these, I think we've addressed some of them. Let me look through here. One question indicates, will the commission accept electronic signatures on all three forms required? That's not actually a question I'm not entirely sure of, because I've not actually applied for a license through this process. I'm assuming that that will come up pretty quickly once folks get into that process. One of the questions, if there is investigation but no discipline taken, will that affect a physician's chance of being eligible for the compact licensure? So let's go back to the eligibility piece. And this is an interesting piece as well that I think the commission's going to have to talk about a little bit about. All the discussion about eligibility for the expedited license has been eligibility at the point in time that you're applying for the license. There's not really been a lot of clarity of, okay, if an investigation happens, is that physician no longer eligible for renewal under the compact process? And my read of it is the intent of the compact really was creating an expedited licensure process. It is not a it's not a different license unto itself. And given the language that they talked about sharing of information, but the statute doesn't say anything that, well, if you're under investigation, you're automatically no longer eligible, but talk about the suspension pieces and reinstatement. My understanding is it's not going to disqualify you from being eligible for that state's license. And then an additional question that I see is, once the application process for applying for the compact is sent in, how long will it take for the letter to be received? That's going to be the process that'll take a little bit of a longer period of time. That will likely be a bit more akin to the regular process to receive a license, and that's the point of it, that the compact, there's a bunch of work that has to happen on the primary source verification side of things, but once that's done, that shouldn't have to be repeated by other states. The other benefit, why this process should go a bit faster than the regular process, is because in order to be eligible, you have to meet all these criteria that you do have a, quote, clean license. And if you have a clean license, that the process for primary source verification does seem to go a lot quicker. I will also say that I know that Wisconsin was actually the first state of principal licensure to issue a letter of qualification, and that happened within a matter of a couple of weeks of the online process going up, becoming up and running. So it's going to take probably a matter of weeks, but at least by the bar that Wisconsin has set, it should only be a couple of weeks. An additional question that has come through is, once the 365 days expires on the letter, as it stands, would the $700 fee be required to be paid again? And yes, that is correct. Once that letter of qualification has a one-year expiration date, after it's expired, the individual would have to go through that whole process again, including payment of the $700 fee. So with that, I think we've run through all of the questions that have come up and I don't think have been answered already. Give it one more minute, and then after that, if not, we will wrap this up. I'll also say that we will be putting this presentation up on WHA's website, so folks can pull this PowerPoint back down for folks to read, and look for information on that out in WHA's Valley Voice soon. All right. So it looks like we haven't gotten any other questions, so I hope this was helpful for folks. If folks have any additional questions, feel free to contact me. Again, it's Matthew Stanford at the Wisconsin Hospital Association. You can find my contact information on our website. And with that, I hope everybody has a wonderful afternoon. Thanks.